Philadelphia typically votes heavily for Democrats, but the 2020 presidential candidates might want to pay attention to the city anyway.
We really wanted to get a flavor of what voters were saying in various parts of the city. It's a very diverse electorate. It's a very diverse city.
We look at how Philadelphia could play a key role in the November election and what some of its more than 1 million voters say could swing their decision. It's Friday, February 21st. I'm Janet Babin for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. After several days of deliberations, the jury in Harvey Weinstein's criminal trial has reached a unanimous decision on three of the five charges against Weinstein, but it continues to be deadlocked on the two most serious charges. The judge has asked jurors to keep deliberating until they reach a consensus. Our reporter Deanna Paul was at the courthouse in Manhattan this afternoon.
We're due to come back to court Monday morning at 9:30, and the jury is supposed to continue deliberating. The judge told them that it's not uncommon for a jury to think that they'll never be able to reach a verdict. We'll see what happens, but either way, Harvey Weinstein still faces charges in Los Angeles on similar sex crimes.
Weinstein denies all allegations of non-consensual sex. More than 80 women have accused the producer of sexual misconduct since the allegations were first reported back in 2017. Wells Fargo will pay $3 billion to settle investigations by the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission over its long-running fake account scandal. The bank admitted that it had illegally misused customers' sensitive personal information and that it harmed some customers' credit ratings. The deal resolves civil and criminal investigations, but it also includes what's called a deferred prosecution agreement. The DOJ reserves the right to bring criminal charges if the bank doesn't satisfy certain requirements over the next 3 years. But it's not the end of Wells Fargo's regulatory troubles. The individuals responsible for the scandal could still face charges, and the bank remains under sanction from the Federal Reserve. Democratic presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg says he's willing to now release three women from non-disclosure agreements related to comments he allegedly made. If they choose to request a release, the women will be allowed to speak publicly about lawsuits they filed over the last 30 years. The decision comes after Bloomberg was criticized for keeping the women bound to their NDAs. And the Democratic presidential candidates are preparing for tomorrow's caucuses in Nevada. But unlike the days leading up to the disastrous Iowa caucuses earlier this month, people in Nevada have already started voting. We catch up with our Wall Street Journal reporter, John McCormick. He's in Las Vegas.
Earlier this week, there were 4 days of early voting where about 75,000 people have already cast their caucus votes. And so on caucus day, the people who actually go to the precinct meetings will be in, you know, gymnasiums and casino ballrooms and other meeting places. And those early votes have to be blended in with the day of votes. So that's probably the biggest difference between Iowa and New Hampshire. And then on the reporting end, there's, you know, they did away with the app that was used in Iowa.
Candidates will be using the Nevada caucuses as well as next week's debate in South Carolina to continue to raise their profiles with voters. But according to the Federal Election Commission reports filed late Thursday, many of the candidates also need to raise cash. The FEC report showed that Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Elizabeth Warren each had less than half as much in the bank as Bernie Sanders. And none was even close to the $460 million war chest of Michael Bloomberg. We'll have more on the 2020 election from a part of the country that many of the candidates might be overlooking coming up after the break. Philadelphia is a major stronghold for the Democratic Party. It's the sort of place the party's eventual nominee for president might take for granted. But the 2016 election showed that Philly matters more than you might think. The city accounts for about 12% of all voters in Pennsylvania. And when the state narrowly went for President Trump over Hillary Clinton, turnout in Philly and its suburbs didn't come through. If Clinton had matched Barack Obama's margin of victory in those areas back in 2016, she would have carried Pennsylvania and possibly the election. Now, primary season's underway. The Wall Street Journal's Scott Calvert headed to Philadelphia to talk with voters. Hey, Scott, tell me what you've been up to.
So I was in Philadelphia twice in the last few weeks, and I covered lots of ground. I mean, I put probably 100 miles on my car both times because it's a big city, and we really wanted to get a flavor of what voters were saying in various parts of the city. It's a very diverse electorate. It's a very diverse city. And so we just really wanted to get the input and voices from lots of different people in the city.
Yeah. And based on your reporting, what issues would you say are getting these voters excited?
Well, I mean, it depends. That's part of the issue. You know, I talked to one guy who was particularly concerned about healthcare. I talked to some other folks who were very upset with immigration policy and the family separation policy at the U.S.-Mexico border. I talked with a woman who in a neighborhood that is struggling a lot in a lot of ways, who said essentially that, you know, the trickle-down thing isn't working, that even though the U.S. economy is booming and parts of the economy in Philadelphia are booming, it hasn't reached everywhere. And so she's looking for a candidate whose policies might help her community.
Yeah. And just as an aside, I was in Philadelphia last summer covering the Women for Trump kickoff event. It's just amazing how many of these voters are so fickle to me. Like they are a typical working class. They have a Democratic background. Perhaps their parents voted Democratic. And yet here they are voting for Trump. You could really see this, how quickly this state could flip as it did in 2016.
Right. Well, I mean, on that point, I mean, one thing I will say is that one strong unifying factor for Democrats seems to be opposition to President Trump. He's not popular by and large in the city, pretty unpopular. And so I talked to a carpenter who is supporting Bernie Sanders. He says he's anti-capitalist and thinks that Bernie Sanders comes closest to what he wants. And I also spoke to a lawyer in Society Hill who thinks that Michael Bloomberg is far and away the most qualified candidate in the field. Both of them, though, told me that whoever the Democratic nominee is in November, they will be supporting him or her. And for both of them, a key objective is to try to deny Donald Trump a second term.
I really like the quote in your story from the lawyer Kevin Hardin. Did you really get the sense from him that he would vote for anyone other than Donald Trump?
Yes, he was very emphatic that he would vote for anybody.
Whoever the Democratic nominee will be, I would be pushing D, trust me, even if it's Michael Bloomberg, I mean, at this point, yeah.
He also made the point that, you know, the idea of sitting out the election because his preferred candidate doesn't get the nomination is something that he just can't even imagine doing.
Many people who are wedded to candidates from a personality perspective, I believe that they're allowed that level of privilege to be able to be wedded to a candidate to say that I'm not voting, I don't care, because the policies that they're voting for, regardless of whether or not that person wins, it won't impact them. So if you're Bernie or bust, or if you're Elizabeth Warren or bust, or you're Michael Bloomberg or bust, that's a level of privilege that I've never experienced. I don't have that privilege.
Scott, wow. How universal was that kind of thinking? I mean, did a lot of voters you spoke with think this way?
No, not everybody felt that way. I spoke to a woman who is a strong supporter for Bernie Sanders. In fact, she's a co-chair of Philly for Bernie. And what she said was, it's just too early to have that conversation. It's premature. You know, the primary is still very much in full swing. And there's just no point in her saying, well, I'm going to commit to voting for whoever the Democrat is. She obviously hopes that that's Bernie Sanders. But, you know, she also made the point that she doesn't think that any Democrat should get a free pass. These are people who have to earn her vote. And so she's not going to just, you know, give a blanket commitment to vote for any Democrat.
Scott, strong turnout in Philadelphia isn't a guarantee. So I'm wondering, based on your reporting, what you think might keep these voters from turning out?
Well, I think that depends. I think ultimately, you know, I think it does matter who the nominee is. And we saw this last time. If you look at 2016, there are certain parts of the city where Hillary Clinton got a significantly smaller number of votes than Barack Obama had gotten in both of his runs. And in parts of North Philadelphia, which is a heavily African-American area, lower income in many places, a lot of folks simply stayed home. They didn't vote for anybody. And in Northeast Philadelphia and parts of South Philadelphia that are traditionally working class parts of town, you also saw a big drop off for Clinton in 2016. And a lot of those folks instead voted for Donald Trump because they clearly thought that he was the better choice. So I think some of it will depend on who the actual nominee is. And I think there's also there also are a number of people in Philadelphia who just question the point of voting. I met a woman who told me that she doesn't vote because she thinks it just doesn't matter.
It's like, is he really going to do what he says? Or is she going to do what she's saying? Like, some people do break promises. They sell us dreams. And it's sad. It is. Why bother to vote if our voice opinion doesn't even matter? It doesn't. Because if it did, then, you know, things would be better.
That was a caregiver you talked to. Her name, Aisha Del Valle. So, Scott, I wonder if during your reporting in Philadelphia, you met one of these elusive swing voters we hear so much about.
Well, I didn't meet any swing voters per se, but I did meet a man named Mike Keenan, and he's a teacher in Philadelphia. He's a registered Democrat. He doesn't always vote Democrat, but he voted for Barack Obama twice. He voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, largely because of their support for education funding. But he told me that he's leaning toward voting for President Trump in 2020. And he's sort of the Democrats' worst nightmare because he's somebody who they might have thought they could count on, but looks like they might lose him.
I just think what's going on economy-wise, the direction that the country's going in terms of, taking America first, putting more into what we're doing, to take care of our own consideration, what this country needs to get better. I think that's been really what he's been trying to do. I know sometimes the message gets clouded with his rhetoric, but I just think the direction this country is right now economically is a good spot to be in. It's probably why I'm leaning towards him.
Scott Calvert, where are you going next?
Well, probably back to Philadelphia at some point to take the temperature of voters as we move further along in the process. Pennsylvania has a relatively late vote as far as their primary is concerned. They don't vote until April 28th. In a normal election cycle, the nomination might be essentially decided by then, but this is a very different year, so it's entirely possible that there'll be lots of questions still unanswered when that happens at the end of April.
Scott Calvert, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, robots are invading supermarkets. They count soup cans, they scan for spills in the aisle, but some customers get the feeling these robots might be following them. They aren't completely paranoid either. You can find these robots working in some Walmarts, Albertsons, and Kroger's, and they're often programmed to keep their distance from customers. So if you're casually working your way down the aisle, stopping every so often to browse, it can seem like you're being tailed. Engineers are still working on ways to make interactions between robots and people feel less creepy. Ultimately, the goal is to build machines that can understand things like social context and body language. But the technology isn't there yet. In the meantime, don't freak out about that robot right behind you in the frozen food section. It's just counting inventory. Probably. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate us, review us, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Janet Babin for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.